outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Well, we just packed up a lot of boxes, headed out to Blue Sheep Media.
That's what I heard, that we have a shipment on its way.
Well, it's not on its way yet. It's still in my garage. Sarah's car's out in the driveway at the moment. We loaded 4 pallets of books, some to you, some to Anchor. So things are rolling.
Oh, geez.
Heard today the book is printing.
How do you already have a copy?
I don't.
Okay. I saw a text message of you with a book on a chair.
Yeah, I printed the cover off from the PDF file that we have, and I glued it to the top of another book that was the same size, and so I get some photography. You're the first person who's actually called me on that. Do you have a copy of that book? Which, of course, would not be possible.
I was going to say, as your publisher, I was going to have a little conversation with you about that and how you got an inline on that the publisher doesn't even have.
Yeah, well, you got to work the system. That's what people always say, so...
I believe you on that.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And we want to welcome you to the God Journey. Kyle's back. He was with us last week and from Wyoming. And publisher at Blue Sheep Media, high school volleyball coach, and restraining counselor of some kind, or whatever you said last week. That was interesting.
Hopefully the restraining is the last resort. Hopefully I don't have to do too many of those, but unfortunately it's been more frequent this year than it normally is. So,
boy, that's just sad you even have to do it in this day and age that somebody's that far out of control. That's too bad.
Yes, it is.
Well, I just got back from Florida this week after hanging around the whatever that state is. I don't know, the Gator State or the – I don't even know what they call that thing.
I was going to comment that it looks like you were working on your tan over the last 10 days.
My tan?
Your tan.
Dude, I'm Northern European. When I'm walking in the morning, it's before the sun even rises. I put in my 4 miles before the sun even breaks.
Well, I guess maybe tan's not the right word. Say cherry red. How's that? Is that a little better?
Yeah. Well, I'm not even trying to do that. This was an interesting trip in that I spent 10 nights away and slept every night in a hotel.
Really?
Man, I stay in people's homes. I prefer to stay in people's homes, but this was everybody who wanted me in their home had cats. And so I ended up in a hotel room one after the other. I'm going, this is kind of, I mean, it's there's a part of it when you get away from the day and you have some space to be alone, that's a gift. Mm-hmm. So it's not a bad thing, but I've always enjoyed the extra conversation and things that happen because you stay in people's homes. But I never got to the hotel very early at night anyway, so maybe it didn't matter. But yeah, I had a great trip, great seminar in Miami, which we got some audio, so we're going to make that available at some point at Livestream, but it's going to take a while to get that processed, I think, because it's some stuff I really haven't taught on a lot lately about how to live loved. There's some of the practical stuff about living loved. And then I visited some friends who lost a son recently. This really felt like God said, I want you to take them out to dinner for me. So I told them it was from Jesus, took them out to dinner, spent an evening just with them. And the situation, I told them, I'm happy to help them process stuff if they want to. And if they just want to have a distractive evening, happy to have that too. And then from there across to the west side of Florida. And man, a bunch of new people I've never been with before. And at the end of it, one congregation, interestingly enough, that I've never been with a group of people so well-versed in all things Wayne Jacobson.
Really?
Read every book, every podcast, not necessarily everyone, but a lot of them. And I was just a fun conversation with this relational congregation. It's a little off the beaten track way in terms of not trying to be a normal quote unquote church, but man, a great day with them. I really enjoyed the fellowship, really enjoyed the engagement. So good trip overall. Then I came home.
Nice. How did they, what was their expression of community? What was a little off? You said it was off the beaten path. What was off the beaten path about it?
Well, I mean, sitting around tables and chairs, not so much service driven as they are relationally engaged with each other. A lot of neat camaraderie among them. You can tell if people enjoy being with each other or they're just having a meeting. They seem to really enjoy being with each other. And the questions were real questions coming not just out of a curiosity about theological things, but coming out of their own journeys and trying to process some of what's working for them and what's not. And just really, really enjoyed it. And then found out that church has come through a lot of pain. I guess the guy thought, many people in the congregation thought that he, the current pastor, who wasn't professionally trained as a pastor, but kind of took over after all the other pastors, ended up with some moral situations that were a bit of a problem. And so, yeah, he ends up in charge of the whole thing, or just kind of coordinating for everybody. And so, yeah, it was just a lot of fun getting to know him and them and watching where their journey had taken them.
Well, and I was going to ask you about that, if they had an actual defined pastor, quote-unquote, role, or if it was more community-driven, no defined roles. How did they navigate that?
Well, it's a pretty small bunch, so I don't think there's a whole lot of program underlying it. There's just a whole lot of pain behind it. But I was going to say about the guy who's currently coordinating the thing, when the Jake book came out, they all swore he wrote the book and put it under a pen name, because I guess the story is painfully close to some of the things that they went through.
And, oh, wow.
So, yeah, he had to assure them that, in fact, that he hadn't written it. Some nut from California had, so. Or a couple of nuts from California. Yeah, it was interesting. I had a great time with them. It's a lot of fun. Interestingly, okay, They've got a little thing going on in the community that's very bridge builder oriented. They were really picking my brain. There's a real controversy between the religious crowd in town and some of the GLBTQ community over some school issues. So it felt like a little I've done this before. So they said, maybe we'll have you come back and help us with that. I haven't done that in a while. So we'll see.
Do you think there's some common dialogue that's there? Is there actually some bridges to be built?
Well, not right now. Right now, they're just headed for increased polarization, and it's power. Okay. It's a power fight right now. And I just told them, you got to reframe the debate. And so some of them are reading the new book, A Language of Healing, because they're on our launch team. So they've got an advanced copy, and then they're reading it, seeing if that will help, and maybe if it'd be valuable for me to come back sometime. So
awesome.
Anyway, don't know where else we're headed today, Kyle, but let me read you some email we got in response to the last podcast. I think you'll enjoy some of this. And then one that came to Brad and I, but kind of plays into something we talked about last week. He said, this is from Caleb, I like what you guys said in the podcast about finding ways to reach out to the younger folks. That means something to me. My generation is very hungry for authenticity, like you said. But I think many of us are afraid to talk about or display our hunger because we are surrounded by a culture that doesn't value that. Isn't that strange? That younger group does, but they're saying the wider culture doesn't. I hope this starts to shift during my lifetime. I've always thought the most engaging thing, at least it is to me, I don't know about other people, when I'm discussing or sharing life with Jesus with other people, I'm always more engaged by authenticity than I am entertainment or humor. And I think there's a lot of humor in authenticity too, but
yeah.
To me, when somebody breaks that barrier of just saying what everybody expects and get right down to the core of their heart, that's the best stuff. That's the stuff that tears my heart out. Good stuff.
Yeah. I'd have to agree with you on that. I would say in some regards, I would even challenge what Caleb said in regards to the wider culture not valuing authenticity. Because, for example, Brené Brown, when she did her now world famous TED Talk on authenticity, that's one of the most watched TED Talks in TED Talk history. And I think because what Caleb is getting at is very, very true, that being able to live out of authenticity, I think it is unique in our culture. And I think that often, unfortunately, that's not the first place that people try to go. But I would strongly agree with you that, man, that's so engaging when somebody takes that risk and allows themselves to be seen without knowing where the outcome's going to go. Because anytime you allow a piece of your heart to be seen, it can go one of two ways. And that's where it gets challenging. I feel like that's why there's a hunger for authenticity in our culture, and yet there's still a lot of fear that's tied around it.
Yeah, there is. And people sometimes when they, if somebody's really going to get real and open up, then we're kind of faced with whether we want to face that in ourselves or not. And
yeah,
we truly can't be authentic with others until we're authentic with ourselves. And I think religion is a whole lot of hiding from our authentic self when we're so busy with our imposter self, which we don't know it's the imposter self. It's, you know, we think it's the spirit side of the spiritual man, where I'm trying to put on the right words, say the right things, but it's a move away from reality because I'm not really unpacking where my brokenness is. I'm not unpacking where my doubts are. Mm. And so I think we always say that religion makes us a little bit relationally challenged. I think that's true.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Absolutely.
Someone enjoyed our little foray into The Bachelorette, said, I just wanted to say thank you for this podcast. It really spoke to me, especially on the subject you guys talked about on The Bachelorette, the subject of sex before marriage and the importance of waiting has been a question and a struggle for me in the last while. I've been questioning whether it's actually that important. I was raised very religiously, and I've seemed to pendulum swing a little more from religion. And some things like the sexual subject have suffered a little bit from it. I'm engaged to be married in a year, and I've always thought I'd wait to have sex until I'm married, but me and my fiance have waited so far. But I'm afraid my questioning the importance of waiting has really worried and actually hurt her a little bit. So he said, having heard us talk about it, it just kind of freshened his resolve to get to marriage and be ready that way.
That is a tough, tough conversation. I feel like right now, just even in recent history, I've been having that conversation almost on a daily basis, either high school students or college age students, just really wrestling with that conversation. And is it worth waiting until marriage? What's, you know, when so many people around them are not, you know, that the fact that there's been a couple of individuals in bachelor history that have been quote unquote virgins, self-proclaimed virgins. And that's been a major national headline news that somebody would even hold on to their virginity and not just enjoy that aspect of life. And that's a tough one. What, especially when you're talking with younger couples or younger adults, how do you advise them in that conversation as far as the value of waiting for sex until marriage? And because I guess for me, I was a virgin when Jess and I got married. And yet it took probably 2 to 3 years of very intentional work with God to try to untangle all of the shame and guilt that religion had placed on sexuality for me. And so, yes, I had quote unquote checked off the box of maintaining my virginity until marriage, but then I had to untangle all of the nasty religious stuff that had been tied to that so that I could actually enjoy intimacy with my wife in marriage.
Wow. And now we hear that story a lot, true, particularly from the chastity culture, kids that are made chastity promises when they're 12 or 13 because their parents are really panicked. And some of the stats show that it doesn't help much. Kids still get engaged early. But those that don't end up getting married and unable to grasp sexuality as a gift from God after they're married, because it's just been seemed like so dirty and so forbidden. That's how they've dealt with it in their head. That they get to the place where they can actually, now it's the where God wants it, and they can't do it because they've been so biased against it. And that's kind of a big deal right now. I look back at our day. Sarah and I dated 3.5 years almost between when we started dating and the time we got married. And but the support system back in the day to stay true to marriage was pretty much in the culture. You know, we didn't have friends with benefits, and now you got people who are polyamorous that just sex is not a real connection between human beings. It's just an amusement, and you can do it with anybody you want. And even wives not getting jealous of a husband or vice versa. Husband's not getting jealous if a wife's having engagements with other people, because that's not what their marriage is built on. Their marriage is built on their love and commitment to each other, but the commitment isn't necessarily to sexual exclusivity. I've always thought the power of love and why God wants sex inside a committed relationship is because of the fierce power of sexuality and what it makes available. If it's not just an amusement, if it's really a connection of two lives spiritually, then that puts you right in each other's hearts in a way that making it casual to me just corrupts it. So we made it to marriage. I would say over my pastoral experience, I would say by far the vast majority of people that I have married were sexually engaged or even living together before they got married. And that's very common, especially when people are getting married so late. It was part of my drive. I was afraid Jesus would come before I could get married. That was my biggest fear. Every time somebody go off about, you know, Jesus is coming before 1970, I'm going, hold on a minute, man. I'm in graduating high school till 71. And I'm begging God, please, man, you got to keep, just let me have a week or two of being married. I really want to know what that's all about. Now I've had 44 years and it's like, okay, I'm ready for you to come now. I mean, I'm loving my marriage, but the world's really pretty screwed up. So we made it to that finish line and we've never regretted it. I mean, Sarah and I have only known that kind of intimacy with each other. We've only known it in the midst of a committed, we're in this together and we're going to learn together. And the joy, I don't know of anybody who was faithful to marriage that regretted it. But again, that's partly why I got married at 22 instead of waiting till 32 or 33 or, you know.
Yeah.
Our sexual peak as men is somewhere like 15, 16 in terms of drive. And the way our society, you know, puts off marriage and being responsible to have a home and build a home and make a life. And then it's just whatever the whims of temptation are and the media throws it at you and your friends are doing it, even though all that's declining statistically right now. There's a whole concern about the young, older teen, young 20-ish people that are not having sex anymore because they're finding their amusements with other things, gaming or porn or whatever. And it's not even, sexuality is no longer even attached to another human being. It's just a solo exercise. And I think when God gave us that kind of sexual insight, there's a really good reason why God wants it where he wants it. And, it's not that, you know, he doesn't love us and forgive us if we've gone outside of that, but there's things then you've got to negotiate in your journey because of that. Just what that warps in us, I think.
Yeah. And I, you know, for me, it's been really interesting, especially dialoguing with Jess, because she has a different past than I do and a different story than I do. And so that's been one of the joys of our marriage is being able to talk about our intimacy and our sexuality very openly in a level of trust. And I feel like that's been the biggest part of it is, for me anyway, has been the trust that this is my wife. And, you know, there's been times where sexual intimacy has not gone perfectly or things have messed up or, you know, there's been mishaps that have happened.
Like, well, let's be careful, TMI here. Let's be really careful.
I don't want to get too TMI, but
make sure your wife's okay with what you share.
But to be able to laugh about it or to be able to talk about it later or, and all those different things, and being able to do that in a relationship of trust that I know that this person isn't leaving me. We've committed our lives to each other to figure even this out together and to be able to enjoy that and to know that the two of us are getting to enjoy that as a couple has been really incredible. But yeah, today's culture, especially with Jess and I expecting our daughter, and I'm having all these conversations with young men and women, and you're absolutely right. Sociologists and psychologists are very concerned because the iGen generation is moving more towards an asexual type relationship, and largely because of social media. They don't know how to have interpersonal relationships. They don't know how to connect well in person with another human being. And so sending, you know, nude texts and sending videos, watching porn, being involved in those avenues where there isn't that risk, there isn't actually interpersonal communication or relationship that's taking place, is safer. And so that's the route that they're taking. And yet, you know, for at least in the state of Nebraska, if you take a nude snap of yourself, that's the creation of child pornography. And then if you distribute it, it's not. And if you have it on your phone, then that's intent to distribute and then distribution of pornography, of child pornography. So not only are these young people sharing themselves with people that they may not even know, but they're also committing a felony.
Wow.
Wow. They could have them as a registered sex offender for the rest of their life.
Yeah, not to mention once you get it on the internet, there's no way to pull it back. It just kind of proliferate. Yeah. And you never know what somebody's got it and when they bring it out. And I just think when God gave us ways to live in the world, it really wasn't about keep it pure for me so I don't have to get angry. It was really about us. It was really about watching out for us. And Sarah and I, like our journey, we're really grateful that we've had the experience that we've had together and that we've enjoyed that. Now, we got this too, and this was from something Brad and I were talking about, but I thought it might fit here.
Yeah.
It said, I hear you and Brad talk on the podcast, and I get so angry, not at you two, but at my husband and my brother-in-law who cheated repeatedly on his wife and put her through 20 years of alcoholic behaviors, not physical abuse. Mm. Several other men I know who have been unfaithful to their wives. It's awesome that you two love your wives and have been faithful to them. It's awesome that you love God and live in the reality of his love for you and others, but you are in the minority. And that would be reason enough right there. Some of you guys who struggle with faithfulness or whatever to your wife, if my wife had to ever say, write, or feel any of the pain that I see in this letter, it would kill me.
Mm.
You know, and that's the other side of it. It's not just, you know, premarital. It's, yeah, we live in a culture where it seems like we're just go with our hormones and go with our arousals and not, and you know, it's not just today because when you read the New Testament, they're always telling people, look, you've got to abstain from sexual immorality. You got to refrain from it. You've got to, you know, we're trying. It's just sometimes humanity, I guess, like animals. It just can't seem to pull back enough to figure out how to do it right, but. My heart goes out to people who haven't had that kind of mutual caring relationship where each one is guarding the other one's heart. Often it's the woman guarding the guy's heart, but the guy's not guarding hers. And it can be the other way around. I've got stories like that too, but not as many.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, if we could really wrap our hearts around seeing sexuality the way God does and living inside his protections for us, we create an awful lot less pain in the world.
Mm. I feel like that comes back to what we were talking about last week, because I feel like until we have known and experienced God's life there, especially in today's culture, resisting our desire to explore and enjoy our sexual appetites in whatever form that looks like, it is so alluring, and it's so subtle, and it's so available, and yet, like, to know God's provision there, to know his life and his love there, I feel like that's one of the frontiers right now that very, very few people, especially my age, in, you know, late 20s, 30s, really know that space. And it's, you know, it breaks my heart for the younger generation. You know, I was talking with some of my students, and to hear some of the stories and some of the things that they have done and their perspective on what sexuality and sexual intimacy is, it just breaks my heart. Because then I see some of them, there's a couple of individuals, I see them in these toxic, abusive, emotionally manipulative relationships, but that was the first person that they shared sexual intimacy with. And they don't understand why their heart is so connected to that individual and why they have such a hard time distancing themselves from that person. But they don't realize, back to that conversation of transparency, they were in vulnerability. There's no space where you're more vulnerable than in sexual intimacy with another person.
Scripture does talk about there's a joining of two lives. And it's, you know, even talking about it happening with a prostitute, there's a joining of that, which make something very dark in us. And yet what I love, what Bob Stamps always says, who was on the podcast with me recently as well, you can't begin to fix sexual brokenness until you first of all see sexuality as a gift God gave us, not a dirty thing that God doesn't want or God can't look at or God, you know. I think religion has always started with this is a dirty, horrible thing. And yeah, you get away with it in marriage because that, you know, God needs kids to be born. But to really start with, you know, even if you have same-sex attraction, even if you're addicted to pornography, to begin to celebrate your sexuality as a gift from God will help you move it into the space where he has it for you, rather than look at it as something dirty, horrible, and shaming that makes you broken, because that shame, I had the conversation with someone today, shame always produces what it pretends to lead us away from. It produces more of the very thing that we think if we shame somebody enough, they'll get away from it. And actually, it just increases the bondage, which is why Jesus unpacked shame so well. But, you know, people who struggle, I think you got to say, this is a gift. This is a gift God gave me. And I may have messed it up. I may have it messed up right now, but it's still a gift. And I can come to God saying, help me learn to live inside the gift the way you gave it to me, rather than think it's just this dirty, cheap, horrible thing. I mean, I feel like we ought to probably have Tracy Levinson on, because she's the
I was going to say, the three of us should talk together. Yeah.
Help us with shame and all those kinds of things. Her book, what's her book's name? Sheesh. Unashamed.
Just knowing my story with it, and you know, that was very much the perspective that I was taught, is this is something that's, you know, that's awful, that you should avoid at all costs. And you know, the conversation of this is a gift, and learning from God how to enjoy that gift in a healthy way. I don't know if we talked a little bit about having that conversation with 500 teenagers in the mountains of California. Did we talk about that at all?
I don't think so.
So I was actually asked to go and speak at a youth conference, and there was a panel of us, and there was me and there was three pastors, and we were sitting in a room of roughly about 300-350 teenage guys from Southern California. And this whole panel was on
this.
Panel was on sexuality and spirituality and masculinity. And so then all the students were able to write in questions. And obviously it's a room full of teenage guys, so the conversation about sex and masturbation and pornography comes up. And there was this guy, there was a pastor that was there that just went hard on the shame train in regards to sexuality, masturbation, and how to even navigate or even talk about the fact that you have a sexual desire, and that is a God-given desire. That was the way that he was portraying it, was it's not a God-given desire. It's something that you have to endure until you're in marriage, and then it becomes godly. But until it comes, it's something that you have to resist to the best of your ability. And you could just see the shame just landing on these like 300 or 350 young men. And I remember just stopping the conversation and being like, look, you know, And I'm just using an example of a conversation that Jess and I had in regards to masturbation and trying to navigate that and sexual desire. And I was like, the challenge is like right now that often in the Christian church, in the institution of Christianity, the only conversation that's had with men is like, okay, don't have sex before marriage or you'll die. You know, that's the worst thing possible. And then that's the only advice that's given. And so then you've got, you know, according to Covenant Eyes, you have over 50% of pastors polled that have an ongoing struggle with pornography, but we're pushing it under the rug. We're just managing that sin to the best of our ability and hiding it to the best of our ability. So we had this dialogue, and I could just see these pastors on the back of this auditorium just waiting. I mean, they're just seething, like they're just waiting for me.
And they want to talk to you.
Oh, they wanted to talk to me. And so all the guys file out and they're all standing there and they went at it. They're like, man, you just gave all those teenagers a free license to go and masturbate whenever they wanted to and to do it, like, and all this stuff. And, you know, and I'm just standing there listening. And then the guy that actually hired me to come and speak comes up and he's like, so, all right, gentlemen, let's have a diet. Let's get real here. Let's get transparent here. How many of you masturbated in the last week? And every single pastor that wanted my head that was standing in that circle raised their hand.
Oh, wow.
And that was and so then I was like, look, guys, like, this is why we have to have the conversation. Because the 5 steps and the sin management strategy you guys are trying to implement aren't even working for the leaders that are trying to teach them. So then how are we going to have this conversation with young men and women in regards to sexuality?
And did you leave with your head intact?
Yes, I still have my head intact. However, unfortunately, they did try to get me fired from my job as a counselor, and they tried to blackball me from having any involvement with that nomination for the foreseeable future. So that was interesting.
Maybe that's what our younger fellow was talking about earlier, about authenticity isn't really welcomed. You know, we like to talk about authenticity, but when it comes down to these kinds of things that are delicate and often laced with shame, and people aren't being honest about their own struggle with these things. So everybody feels like they're the only one that struggles with sexual appetite and desire and, you know, whatever. And instead of just being honest, it's a thing that humanity faces. God's built a, not only a gift, it's a very strong gift. It's a very strong desire, no matter how you're playing it out. And for God to reroute that into the channels that are most appropriate and most healthy for us, I think even God knows that's a big deal. He's willing to walk us through that. He's not going to demand that we reach a certain performance level and then shame us when we fail or condemn us when we fail. He's really looking and say, I want to come inside that with you, which if you don't see sex as a gift God gave, you don't invite him in there with you because you feel too dirty about everything. So you don't want him in there. You don't want to dialogue about it. You just want to, because most people who struggle with sexual temptation, it's not like they always do it, but they repent up and then they're just white knuckle it, and they can get 2-3 months, weeks, whatever, before it just collapses again. And it's that kind of ongoing struggle. And we talked about here when someone wrote this in a Christianity Today article recently, when you ask a man how he's doing spiritually, what he's thinking is, how am I doing sexually? Mm. That's an interesting thought, because most guys put it right there. Where's my lust, and what is lust? And, you know, we've made anything attractive / arousing lustful. And I think it's a problem. We take Jesus' words, which lust is really about, I would if I could with that woman or that man or that whatever. That's lust. Lust is not, wow, that's a beautiful person, or I'm tempted a little bit by that. Or that's not the lust Jesus was talking about. But when we made it, any kind of sexual awareness is the lust that Jesus condemned in the Sermon on the Mount. Now we've got a mess, because if that's what lust is, then you might as well just go ahead and do whatever you're being tempted to do anyway, because you're not strong enough to resist it. One of the things as we're talking about this, because I was thinking as you were talking about the pastor of this church I was at in Florida that, you know, as a series of sexual indiscretions by a pastor. It was a fairly well-known pastor this summer who resigned from his church and went away. And I pulled one quote from an article that was his statement about it, I guess, because he took a sabbatical and there was conversation about what had gone wrong, something, and then his wife in here on the stage. And they're not really exactly saying what the problem was, but here's the quote. He said, I went away to human school, speaking of his sabbatical. I went away to learn how to be true to myself, how to be real, how to be healthy, how to be honest. And it's so hard. And this is a guy who's in his 50s. And this is one of the things that's really plagued me about the way we do, and it's religious leadership. I don't necessarily say spiritual leadership, but, you know, it's a vocation. You choose it at 18. You go off to college and seminary, and you come out in young 20s. You've got all the answers for the world. You haven't learned to live anything yet. And this I think, of a lot of the ministry people I meet and talk to say in your 50s, I've never learned to be true to myself, how to be real, how to be honest, and it's hard work in your 50s. I mean, that's the work of the 20s and 30s, I would think.
Yeah.
And it pains me that we've created an environment in which the performance and professionalism of my act from a stage is completely disconnected from what's going on in my real heart and emotional life. And so these guys, I mean, I feel for the guy. I'm not blaming him, because I think that's a pretty painful thing. You're up front of people every week. You're putting on a projection of what it is people are supposed to be living, and you're telling them how they're supposed to be living, but you're not doing it. And you've never wrestled with authenticity in your own soul. So what it is that are you actually passing on to people that's going to be as painful as it is for you? Because now you've got everyone else pretending, and they've got the same stuff going on inside, but nobody's talking about it because we haven't paused to have the honest moment. And I mean, seriously, to me, that's why we ought to pull, if we're going to have religious leadership or spiritual leadership, we ought to pull it out of people in their mid-30s and 40s who have raised a family, who have demonstrated in their heart that they can live this, that they're honest with themselves. I think we put someone on a stage too soon.
Yeah.
It's easy to play to the stage and not do the important work that needs to be done in the human heart. And then you're a danger to yourself, your wife, and the congregation, I think.
You know, as you were just talking there, I was thinking back to when I was working as a counselor for students in seminary. And I remember just thinking, like, man, because there was a couple of clients that I worked with that I deeply enjoyed working with them because they genuinely wanted to do the work. And yet I remember thinking, they're not going to let you into Christian leadership. Like you're not going to get hired as a pastor, because they were willing to be honest and open with what they were struggling with. They wanted to do the work. They wanted to really be figure out how to live genuine to who God had created them to be authentic and present with the different challenges that they're trying to navigate, and allow God to be big enough to walk in their life. And walk in them in the transformation with them, and to be transparent and to be open about that process. And yet my thought was, man, there is no way that a church is going to hire you if you live that loud. Like if you actually live at that level of transparency, you won't be quote unquote qualified in a lot of religious circles to be in leadership, which just broke my heart, because it's like, man, I think you're on the right path. You know, it's like, I think you are doing the work to allow God to really transform your heart. But at the same time, in this institution, this seminary school that he was in, he was being removed from positions of leadership because he was doing the work in his heart.
What I think is often true at a time like this in religious environments, if you're too honest, I think that's what you're saying, then you've just given people ammunition for everyone else who's pretending around you that they're better than they are. And you go down this authenticity road, and then people have got ammunition, man, to take you out whenever they disagree with something going on in your heart and life. They can be dismissive. I see it even in when I'm really honest about how I moved from being a pastor to being outside of that, and what I went through, the betrayal of a friend and the pain that was it. And then other people just, I see this on blogs, whatever. Somebody will send me a link to something. Somebody criticizing me. They'll just say, Wayne's still living off the bitterness and hurt of his departure from church. Now, these are people who don't know me, but they want to be dismissive. And so your authenticity is the cause of someone else being able to be dismissive and saying, we'll have to listen to this guy because he's just bitter and hard-hearted from this experience he went through. And I think that's what you're saying. If you're too real and too authentic in a religious environment where pretense is the order of the day, you won't have opportunities in leadership, and you'll give people occasion to mistrust, distrust, and accuse.
I guess this is where I really wrestle, Wayne. When I was in my early 20s, I had several people come to me and say, oh man, you need to go into full-time ministry. You need to be a pastor. You've got the gift. God's calling is on your life. We want to put you on a stage. And that's a very seductively alluring statement to a 20-year-old, 20-something. And yet, like, I knew in my heart that wasn't the route I was supposed to go. To go to seminary. And I knew that God wanted to use my life to impact the world around me, to share his love and his life with people. But being a pastor, I knew I had this deep inkling in my heart that something wasn't right with that. And yet, you know, trying to encourage and trying to help young people who genuinely have that desire to serve and walk with God. And yet in some circles, it's still branded to them that, no, you've got to go to seminary. You've got to be a pastor in a church, in a quote unquote church institution. And that's the way that you're going to lead, and that's the way that you're going to do life. But so what would you – how would you encourage, or how would you challenge a young person that says, hey, I really feel like God's placed this desire in my heart to walk with him, to encourage others to walk with him, but I don't know how to live that out. How would you even address that conversation with a young person that's in their late teens to mid-20s?
This may be a conversation for another day. We are horribly over time at the moment.
But, okay.
I don't mind sitting down with people and just say, you know, let God lead you to this. And I wish I had the presence of mind. The problem is I could teach really well at 22 to hold a crowd's attention, to give them insights from Scripture that were beyond my own life and experience. And I wouldn't say I was a fraud or hypocritical. Yeah. I just had to pretend to live it better than I did. And I don't think that's helpful. I think the process of teaching is taking people along with you on a journey and letting them see your struggles as well as your whatever. The stage, and I appreciate that you were kind of attuned to that when you were pretty young. The stage is a very seductive place. And the lights and the adoration you get, and people feel like, oh my gosh, you're this super spiritual thing because you're up there and you said some things that really touched my heart. And then people get a projection, an image of us that's more of a projection of their own desires than it is who I really am or who the person is. And then you've got a choice either to move back toward what's real, or then you start serving the illusion. And then 10, 15 years out, you're going to realize you're not the person who you pretend to be on that stage. And I think at every point, you're going to make a decision. Do I keep pretending because this is my job now and I have to? Or at some point, am I going to make the difficult choice? And, you know, this guy that I told, this pastor from, I think, Texas, he went into his 50s before he could finally say, wow, this whole thing is an illusion. And I have never learned to do the tough work of being authentic with me. And I would encourage, I think young people, I just think let stuff unfold for you. Don't just hang it on your gifts. Hang it on your heart. And it just takes, I've appreciated the choices you've made, Kyle, actually, to step away from positions that were offered to you because your heart just said it wasn't ready yet. And I wish I'd trusted more of that when I was younger, because I think that's really sound stuff. But we're way over time, man. We got people missing buses and late for work and whatever else. So thanks for joining me again today, Kyle.
Absolutely. This was a fun.
We'll probably come back to this theme down the road because I think it may. So if you've got some questions, comments from stuff we've talked about, they send them in to Kyle or I, and we'll talk about them further up the road somewhere. Thanks, man.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.